This is the last time I will be combining two shorter episodes together. So again, make sure to continue listening after my first goodbye. Thanks for listening and enjoy. I'd like to welcome you back to Trinity's Emerald Triangle. In the episode today, I'd like to talk to you about all the preparations we always had to make before we could go pick up the load out in NorCal. When we would get the call to go out to Cali, the first thing we had to do was make a reservation for a rental car. We didn't buy a car and just use that to go pick up the load over and over. Instead, we tried to drive a separate rental car out for each trip. Utah and Nevada State Patrols and their cooperating DEA buddies love to sit out on the hills just off of I-80 in their squad cars, eating Cheetos while they watch the passers-by with their binoculars and collect data. One cop watches the data that comes up on the electronic sensors, which inform him of the car registration, the car owner's name, and the record of how many times that car has passed by on 80. The other guy, who's probably eating most of the Cheetos, is watching the data on his laptop that is coming in on a $500,000 suitcase-sized machine that imitates a cell tower. This little fake cell tower machine enables the cops to listen in on every phone conversation going on out on the interstate. The technology that these cops use is called Stingray. Stingray is a little machine that was developed during the early 2000s for the war on terror to be able to track the terrorists who used cell phones while they were hiding out in the Afghanistan mountains. It enables undetected military personnel to eavesdrop on unsuspecting communications. Since that war, this military technology has filtered very quickly over to the federal side of things. The feds have financed and given the Stingray technology to tens of thousands of law enforcement groups to use as they see fit. It's amazing how well law enforcement has kept this technology hidden. It's also astonishing at the power of this technology. Stingray picks up everything, all the data off of a cell phone, texts, cells, contacts, photos, especially the photos for the boyfriend, emails, credit card numbers, passwords, etc. Whatever's on your phone. I'm not going to go much into detail for now because it's such a massive program. And I'm planning to devote a whole episode to the subject matter later. Again, if you didn't catch that name, it's called Stingray. If you can't wait for me to produce an episode, go look it up online for yourself, but be prepared to be completely horrified. An issue that came up on renting a car every week or several times a month was the familiarity that the employees had with us at the Salt Lake rental companies. What do you tell the employees about why we were renting so many cars over and over? Got a lot of sights to see? My wife hates flying? I mean, we rented so many cars from different agencies that all of them knew us by our first name. What we actually told them was as close to the truth as we could get. We told them we were paralawyers. Paralegals, who had to carry 10 of 20 big boxes full of legal cases in the back as we went to Colorado and Arizona to work with our clients. Telling them that we were going to Colorado and Arizona was the same mileage as going out to NorCal, up to Portland, and back. We had to explain to the rental companies the high mileage we put on every rental, between 1,500 and 1,800 miles per trip. We figured out that the distance from Salt Lake to Denver, then down to Phoenix, and back up to Salt Lake equals the same distance from the triangle of Salt Lake, out to NorCal, then up north to Portland, and then back down to Salt Lake. This was actually very relevant information for us because when we signed the SUV rental agreements, those nosy butts always wanted to know where we were taking their car. Yes, I'm going to be taking this car out to pick up weed in NorCal. You don't mind, do you? You're definitely a weed courier if you put 4,800 miles on a rental car in 2 weeks. That's if you use the same rental car. Sometimes if we had back-to-back trips, we would use the same car. And boy, I'll tell you, those miles added up. Sometimes, depending on the time of year, rental agencies all over town would only have one or two pathetic cars to pick from. We were forced to take whatever we could get. It was especially bad in August when the rental agencies turn in almost all their cars back to the parent company while they wait for the new models in September to come out. It kind of left us in a 6 to 5 week void there. Another killer season for trying to get rental cars was at the end of January in Salt Lake City for the Park City Sundance Film Festival. Park City is only 45 minutes away from the Salt Lake Airport. Oh boy, and the cost of renting a four-wheel drive quadrupled at least. We were often left with sedans that weren't four-wheel drives. It was very important for us to have four-wheel drive in the winter time. Driving the load over Pendleton's Pass in Oregon and on I-84, driving with snow and ice conditions through Idaho was really harsh in the winter. Like I said, we didn't always have a choice as to what we got to drive. Occasionally, I also had some really personal psychological problems hauling weed in cars like Dodge Intrepids, Chevy Impalas, and Crown Victorias. These were by far the worst cars we were forced to drive. It made my heart palpitate and gave me anxiety attacks to have to drive product in cop cars. It's interesting, those cars could hardly hold any weight in the trunk. They could only hold even a huge boat like a Crown Victoria could only hold 80 pounds in the trunk. In case you couldn't tell, I'm not particularly fond of cops and I really hate their cars even more. The biggest conundrum with renting cars every trip was to be able to rent the cars, the companies required credit cards. That leaves a huge digital footprint. You have to give them your license, too. In the end, this was a large part of their evidence in our discovery after they busted us. But what are you going to do? Let the cops see you driving west on I-80 in the same truck, but never coming back week after week? I think if we had done that, the cops would have nabbed us a lot sooner than they did. I swear, I saw more arrests and yard sales out on I-80 than you could shake a stick at. While we were dealing with making reservations, we also had to wait on the distributor to make collections. The distributor would go around to each hopper and tell them that if they wanted any more product, they had to square up with him. It usually took anywhere from 3 to 5 days to get all the little hoppers and their deadbeat counterparts to pay us. Once the money was collected, we would pack a backpack to deliver to the brokers. These backpacks usually held at least $150,000, sometimes all the way up to $250,000 to $300,000. But before we put the money in the backpack, the money had to be sorted and counted. Have you ever counted that much money before at once? Often, Bob and I were the designated counters. And let me tell you, while it's an extraordinary job, it's also a tedious, dirty one. Money is filthy, absolutely filthy. By the time we finished, it took about 2 hours or more. Our hands would be brown. It was pretty gross. Sometimes counting took even longer because lazy, slipshod hoppers handed their bills to us in messy folds and wads. That used to make me so angry. Man, I would cuss like a sailor about those turds. One day, we ended up counting over $700 extra from one of these sloppy hoppers. I had to uncrumple one by one hundreds of $5 and $10 bills and put them in neat stacks before we put it in the money counter. What a sloth. That particular hopper used to set my counting back almost 2 extra hours. If I had been the kingpin, I would have said, "Off with his head." My very most favorite hopper was the OCD kid. Before turning his money over to us, he would put his bills in a pillowcase in the dryer with 4 sheets of bounce. He literally laundered that money. Then, I kid you not, he ironed the bills to make them crisp and stiff, and he shuffled and sorted them all out to make sure the bills were all going the same way with the heads up in the exact same direction. Bless his ever-living heart. I loved getting that helper's payments. And he was never short or over. Ever. Not once. Now, there's a person that Jesus is going to let through the pearly gates. Oh, how do you count that much money as we had to count? Like I just mentioned before, with a money counter, of course. I think that Trey and Colin bought those counters in Las Vegas and paid straight up cash for about $400 a piece. We heard that sometimes online, cops look for individuals who are buying just a few counters at a time and investigate what those individuals are up to. Another form of digital footprints. So they went down to Vegas to pick them up in person. We used buckets and buckets of Sally's black rubber bands to secure each stack of money. Sorting and counting that much money is actually pretty grueling. While the money counter was whirring away, we listened to loud music so that no one could hear the noise of the counter in the next apartment over of our safe house. We never kept the money at our personal residence. Like all good drug dealers, we counted and stored the money at a safe house. You may be wondering, what kept us from running away down to Mexico with the money? Don't think we didn't think of that many times. But baby Traby, he hates it when I call him that, was on the other end waiting for us to bring him his brokering money. Next came packing. For a 3 to 5 day trip to NorCal and back, one of my biggest problems, which would never occur to a normal traveler, was keeping our personal luggage down to only 1 backpack. Because, well, we only took out 5 deflated cargo bags. After the buy, the boys would fill each one of those huge bags with 20 1-pound airtight packed bags of weed to bring back. To understand how big a 20-pound waterproof cargo bag is, imagine it being full of 15 basketballs or 30 soccer balls. 5 huge canvas bags like that pretty much takes up all the room in the car, and many times we almost didn't even fit the last bag in, which is why there was never enough room for much of anything else on the way home but a driver, a passenger, a backpack, and the load, the most important thing. If you're a woman, could you do with only a backpack for a 3 to 4 day trip? Could your girlfriends? Are you kidding me? Man, it just about killed me. Where am I supposed to put my sun hat, my makeup, my toiletries, my jewelry, my clean underwear, a change of clothes every day, and a pair of shoes to match each outfit? What in the Sam Hill did they expect me to do? Just wear the same clothes on my back day after day? Often, we were delayed an extra day or two, and then I was really gonna stink, almost as bad as those feral boys on the farm. Do I look like a stinky, hippie kind of girl to you? Well, that's kind of what I became. Lastly, we often had to stay up till 2 in the morning waiting to receive the 5 waterproof bags and the money drop off from the distributor the morning before we left. On top of that, we had to wipe the insides of the plastic canvas bags down with bleach towels to try to clean the odor away from the inside of the bags. Even though the weed was in bags and you put it in the bags, the weed is so pungent it still makes the inside of the bag stink. I hated that particular chore. I just really hated that chore. Often, in the busy times, we had to drive back-to-back trips, which could be hard because we had to keep our on-the-grid life going as well. Sometimes all we had was a 4 to 12 hour break to get back out on the road. During that short window of time, we had to frantically renew the rental car, get our utilities and other bills paid, deposit money in the bank accounts, cancel appointments with the dentist, wash clothes, count the money, pack up again, gas up, and rework social schedules. It was really hard at times to have a social life, and we couldn't even think about ever having pets. I love pets, but just can't abandon them for that long a time. The poor little doggles and kitties would have been raising themselves. I remember even doing a couple of 3 back-to-back trips several times. That was killer. We love making the money though, and it was too good to pass up. This was the routine we went through before every trip, and that's about all the time we have for tonight. So remember, stay out of trouble. And make sure you delete those naughty pictures of yourself or your girlfriend on your cell phones before you take it on a trip out on Interstate 80. And don't do anything I would do. We'll see you later. Bye-bye. Trinity here to welcome you into my exclusive drug world of cannabis. Last episode, I talked to you about all the preparation it took before we could gas up the car and get on the road to get that load. Before I get us on that road, very quickly, I'd like to tell you where we're going exactly. We always drove a triangle. We left Salt Lake and crossed the Utah and Nevada desert. Once we got past Reno, Nevada, we cut up north through Highway 20, or we continued a little further west on Interstate 80 to Sacramento. Then we cut up north on I-5, depending on where we were going exactly or what the weather was like. We continued northwest to work our way up to the Redwood Highway until we got to the Emerald Triangle. Those are the 3 counties, Humboldt, Mendocino, and Trinity. From there, we might go many places within the triangle, depending on where the brokers could find the product. Once we delivered the money to the broker and picked up the load, we continued on the Redwood Highway up north past Trinity County, and then cut east to Grants Pass as we worked our way up again on Interstate 5 to Portland, Oregon. We usually spent the night in Portland, and then we headed east on Interstate 84 across the entire state of Oregon and Boise, Idaho, onward to Pocatello, and turning south on Interstate 15, which is a straight shot back down to Salt Lake. Occasionally, we would veer off the triangle a bit and go places either like Grass Valley, California, or Yosemite National Park to pick up loads. That was fun. But we always drove a huge triangle that covered the vast states of Utah, Nevada, California, Oregon, and Idaho. The reason we didn't come back with our load on I-80, which was the way we drove out, is because law enforcement considers this major interstate as one of the largest drug corridors in the country. This interstate runs the gamut from Chicago to San Francisco and is patrolled ferociously, particularly, as I've mentioned many times, in Nevada. Nevada is the 7th largest state in the country, but I swear there's a state patrol stationed about every 10 miles. Nevada state cops buddy up with DEA to nab most couriers with money and loads of drugs along that corridor. Remember a few episodes ago when I told you not to look like a hippie or a gangster when you drive through that state? I had a really good friend who looked like a hippie. Well, actually, he was a hippie who had long blonde dreads. He was going out to pick up a few pounds of weed in the triangle and was carrying $4,000 cash. The Nevada cops pulled him over for following too closely. They shook him down and took his cash and never filed a traffic citation. Oh, yeah. Maybe he lost his money because he was naive. He actually thought he had rights. Or maybe the police are nothing more than roving gangs of thugs, stealing from anybody they can. Or maybe I'm right on both counts. That's why we preferred to add an extra day on to driving by going up north through Portland and catching I-84 with the load, avoiding the southern police gangs. Most of the time, we tried to leave Salt Lake City at dawn so we could get out to Humboldt County to the boys' farm before 10 p.m. We always got off the road before 10 p.m. so we didn't attract too much attention from the patrol cars. We felt like we were sitting ducks when we were driving the load and the money after 11 p.m. There's so few cars out there that you feel like you're more noticeable. So we always tried to get off the road when everybody else did too. One of my favorite parts of the trip was at the very beginning as we whizzed past the Great Salt Lake. It's about 15 minutes out of the city. Usually it was dawn and the sun was just peeking over the mountains in the east. The western sky was an ombre of blended colors from indigo, purple, and pink. If there were clouds out, they would grab the other neon colors like fire orange and rose red, which would have been spectacular enough by itself, but the clear lake would reflect back the colors in the sky and the shadows of the mountains, creating a shimmering mirage with no horizon. The whole sparkly scene looked like it was free-floating in the air. Really, there's just no words to describe how magnificent it was to see the lake blend into the sky. And like the saying goes, so it is on earth, it will be in heaven. So it is in heaven, it will be on earth. After driving only an hour and a half, we hit the state line in Wendover, Nevada. Time to change the clocks in the car. Set them back an hour. That was my duty. Oh, what a chore. Every single model of rental car has a completely different way of opening the gas tanks or changing the clocks. And being as technically savvy as I was, I always had to get out the manual from the glove compartment and figure it all out. We had to have the correct time because, first of all, we left our smartphones at home and turned our other burner phones completely off till we would get near our destination. Because like I've mentioned in previous episodes, the cops are surveying all the phones and the data out on Interstate 80 with the Stingray technology. And since we started using cell phones years ago, Bob and I don't wear watches anymore, so we depend heavily on the rental car clock. We often had a preordained time and place that we would meet up with the boys, and we couldn't afford to forget that we were on Pacific time, which we've done before. Once we hit the state line in Nevada, we drove for about 7 to 8 hours or more across the entire state. Occasionally, we might stop for a real sit-down breakfast of bacon and eggs at the Wendover Peppermill Casino before we got started on the long drive across the state. Kind of get to hang around with all the older couples who, there's a lot of older couples who spend time out there. At first, I hated driving through all the destitute beat-up towns like Elko and Battle Mountain and Wells. Those are terrible places to stop. I mean, don't they sort of sound terrible? But those are terrible places to stop because the gas stations were lame and the restaurants were even lamer. When we stopped to get gas, we paid for the gas in cash up front, trying not to leave another digital footstep. We like stopping at big gas stations like the Pilot and Love stations because they had clean bathrooms until we heard through the grapevine that the cops offer those gas station employees a $500 cash bounty if they turn in any suspicious people that later get arrested. The cops would come into the stations and befriend the employees and give them a direct cell phone number that they could call if they saw any kind of suspicious looking people or activities. So, if a customer comes into those kinds of stations and those employees can imagine that customer as doing anything shady, they call the state cop direct line, and about 5 minutes after the customer pulls out of the station, they're coincidentally pulled over by the cops for, guess what? Following too closely. That kind of put a damper on us stopping in those stations after a while. We also had the same problem with going to the same gas stations over and over too, because like the rental companies, gas station employees started recognizing us. I'm kind of a distinctive person with my blonde hair, and so I would wear a baseball cap and I would cover up my jewelry and my clothes. I liked wearing jewelry. And I would wear a big shirt over my clothes every time I would go to pay for the gas to try to look more innocuous than I do now. Well, Bob would wait outside for me to get the money paid for so he could pump the gas. There are no good places to eat in Nevada except in Wendover and Reno. It doesn't really matter whether it was any of the little shit towns or the big sophisticated franchise pilots and love stations. None of them really have anything decent to eat but junk food and pop, tuna fish sandwiches at Subways, Big Macs at McDonald's, or Quarter Pounders at Burger King. Ugh, gosh, we got so tired of fast food. But to our surprise, we stumbled upon one teeny tiny little gas station in a one-stop sign town of Valmy. Valmy, Nevada. That's right, Valmy. This little gas station restaurant grill had the best fried egg sandwiches. They toasted sourdough bread, fried an egg, and spread cheese and mayonnaise with a heavy sprinkling of pepper and a little bit of salt. Yum. But that was about as good as it gets until Reno. The first year of driving across Nevada, I just hated that whole part of the trip because the interstate is fraught with so many highway patrols everywhere and people pulled over in the yard sales. And as bad as that was, Nevada is just so desolate and brown. Just brown, brown, brown. Like UPS, no other color, just brown. It's scorching hot and dusty in the summers. But after trying to fight our way through all the little two-lane highways through Northern California and Oregon and the constantly changing speeds, those little towns were always going from 25 to 35, back to 55, and back down to 45 and 35, and going up and down and around hills. I began to appreciate the constant speed of 80 miles per hour on the long straight interstates in Nevada and the ease of the nicely graded hills and wide, wide bends. It was just so much simpler how we could just set the speedometer anywhere from 79 to 81 miles per hour and didn't have to really think about it unless we were needing to get off at the interstate and get gas. The car practically drove itself as we sailed along the river of the interstate. Throughout the years of our driving career, I finally learned to appreciate the state of Nevada. Well, that's about all the time we have for tonight, kids. Until then, stay out of trouble. And if you happen to be in Valmy, Nevada, stop and try that egg sandwich. And whatever you do, don't do anything I would do. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.